You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
It's hard to be connected because it might feel safer to be alone, to be isolated, to not connect, to not relate, to not be conscious of the world around you. But I think inevitably, we're shown how connected we are. And sometimes bad things happen that show us that we're really bonded to each other. I care about this. I was up in the mountains this week, and this was earlier in the week. It seemed like the whole country was blowing up, literally. And we were connected. We had this common experience again. You know, I had to write about the Donald Trump escalating a nuclear war via social media. It's kind of an amazing moment in history where, you know, it's kind of confusing to see how violent things can get, you know, threatening North Korea in this historic moment of conflict escalation. A little frightening. And then you feel connected to your neighbor because when you share a common humanity and nuclear war is threatening, like, the whole species, you're like, oh, yeah, we are connected to each other. We actually do have something in common. If there were this, we would really experience it together. I couldn't just be isolated. Something terrible would happen that would bond us, right? I can't just be alone. I have to be connected. I have to be together. And it's a sad day when something so negative is what helps us realize that. Some of us want to just unplug from the whole thing. And we have the sometimes even the luxury of doing that. You know, because maybe you have a bomb shelter and you'll be okay. You know, but then it was Charlottesville, right, last night, during the day, and I felt very connected deeply to the people who were victims of violence and hostility from fascists and racists and white nationalists. No, for me, there was not many sides of this issue. I knew which side I was on, not just by virtue of my ideas, but just by virtue of my skin color. You already organized me. So I'm on this side already, and there's nothing really I can do about it because you already assigned meaning to the amount of skin color I have. So I didn't give myself that meaning. You gave it to me, and now you hate me and want to kill me. So it was clear, manifestly evil thing, evil side. I'm using that word side because that's what the president was talking about, right? Many sides. There was a manifestly evil side presenting evil ideas, kind of forfeiting, getting rid of the love that Jesus still offers them and choosing hate instead. You know, I told someone, if you're not against the white nationalism, you're not with Jesus, but Jesus might still be with you. He still wants you to change, to repent, to move. That's not all you have. But you have there's a path for you to go on here. So I'm not only on the opposing side by default, but because I'm with Jesus. And I want to be on Jesus' side as best as I can. And the community that we have actually helps me do that. I'm not just figuring this out on my own. And then I heard someone died during the whole thing, which kind of escalated it even further. You know, her name is Heather. My heart kind of broke. It was a scary moment. And now we see these things. I don't even know how good it is for me to watch this. But I do. So I saw it. She got killed by a neo-Nazi that rammed a car into her. Her last post on Facebook says, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. So I felt bonded and connected, and even one with her. We belong together. When someone suffers in our body, we all feel it. We all should feel it. And the body even extends beyond this room, beyond this neighborhood, around the whole country and world. God kind of made us that way, and we can't do this alone. And like even Julius was talking about, we're not just bonded with other people, we're bonded with the earth too. So I wanted to at least say that one reason why I want to talk about this idea about being a living organism, living in community, one of the proverbs that we have in Circle of Hope. But even the latest events kind of made it clear, yeah, I have to be connected to people. I have to be bonded. And the suffering that we all share together helps bond us. That's kind of a dark thing to think about. You know, when Jesus puts on flesh, becomes human, to relate to our suffering, he's doing the very thing that we're doing when we suffer together. So a few years ago in Circle of Hope, we were interested in doing a character analysis. At least the pastors in Circle of Hope were. And so we sent out a survey. This is the only time we've ever done this. We sent out a survey to everybody, and we solicited words about our character. Does anyone remember this? This was a few years ago where we sent it to probably one of our listservs. What are the five words you think of when you think about Circle of Hope? And by the way, and the leadership team did it about the pastors. And so we got very immediate feedback, which was very interesting. I think persistent was one of mine. But for the whole community, it's a fascinating thing to do and a good chance to reflect on, you know, how we think of ourselves. And you know what the most mentioned item was by like a factor of like two or three? It's community. You know, and that felt good, actually. Yeah. I'm glad that you think of us that way and we're known that way together. You know, not just up here, but all of us, right? We're a community. That counts. We're known for it. And there's a risk to that because there's a whole mess of problems that can happen in community. There's a lot of reasons to want to be alone, to not be connected, to kind of live in my own isolated zone, to have enough property where it's so much property I don't even have to see anybody, you know? I can live by myself. Like, I was in the mountains this week, and I like going up to the Poconos. And then I was in North Philly with the stroller and the two girls. We just came back yesterday, so I had to go get milk. This was the first thing to do. So we're walking to the corner store, and I was talking to Elaine. And I said, you know, I'm really glad to be in Philly. She goes, why? I said, there's just more people here. You know, and I like that. I like that. We're seeing each other. You know, you could walk for a while in the mountains and not see anybody. Here we actually see people. So it's at least my kind of style. You know, that's not a... If that isn't yours, that's okay. But we're connected to each other. And I like feeling that way. So it's a whole, but it can be messy to be connected, and some of us have experienced the pain of community recently, especially right here on Frankfurt Ave. You know, a lot of people breaking covenants, getting into ending marriages. We all kind of suffer with that. You know, even without being very doctrinaire about it, at least right now, you know, you feel the pain of your friends going through difficulty, you know, at least. So community is complicated. Why would I want to do that? What's the point? Why would I want to invest in so much further attachment when I've already suffered enough loss in my life, you know? I don't want to make more friends. I have enough people that could leave me. So why would I want to collect more people that could? You know, that's how I kind of feel about dogs, you know, and personally. It's like, this thing isn't going to live for very long, and I'm going to love it and feel sad later, you know. I already have enough pain in my life, you know. It's a really negative way to look at an animal, but, you know, I've suffered enough. I asked my cell once, I said, if you could, this is totally a tangent, if you could take a drug to cause you to never suffer again, would you? And the more profound people are like, no, well, suffering has made me who I am and kind of transformed my life. And so if I were to sacrifice that, I wouldn't keep developing. And I think I said, no, I'm pretty good. I've developed enough. I could cruise at this altitude for a while if it meant no suffering, you know. I'm good, thanks. You know, I don't like feeling hurt. You know, it's not fun. But community kind of can cause that to happen and exacerbate it. or at least make it clear. And some that can be hard. One of the reasons I do like it, though, and the ways that I form it, is I go around and I look for connections. Some afternoons, I'm just walking around trying to talk to people and see who they are and what's happening, if we can be friends, further our connection. So I try to make them. And people find this invasive and newsy at times. Like, you're really in my business asking me questions you shouldn't ask me. You know, there's that kind of persistence again. But sometimes I get people who want to talk to me. And that's good, you know. Really, if you say no, get out of here. I'm not trying to talk to you. I'll say, okay, that's fine. You know, I have a book. You know, I don't have to just talk to you. But like the other day, I was at a coffee shop, and there's art around the coffee shop. And I emailed the artist and said, hey, this is pretty cool art. And she wanted to connect more. She actually wrote me back. Finally, someone wrote me back. I just had to say it. I mean, it's right here. There's your email. Why wouldn't I talk to you? You know, I saw something of yours. And I think that feels good. I mean, she actually did say it. Thanks for letting me know that you saw this and it meant something to you. You know, and she'll get on the 5-year waiting list here to be on the First Friday thing that happens in this space, right? Isn't the waiting list rather extensive for how popular this space is? Yes?
It's like a year.
Well. So it's not like Washington football tickets. It's a little bit shorter. Sorry. So I like trying to get into conversations with strangers. And it's not just because I'm extroverted. Actually, I'm looking for more community myself and helping people get into it. And I mainly want to do that because we want to. I think there's really nothing that new under the sun. You know, I think we're pack animals. And millennials, who are kind of receptacles of baby boomer contempt, that's one of their main features, is that they hold contempt from older generations. Have you ever noticed this? Like, you buy avocado toast and that's why you can't buy a house. Like, there's these wild kind of accusations thrown at you for why, and some of you are millennials, this is why you're ruining the world, you know. I saw this headline the other day. It said, millennials are ruining the napkin industry because they're buying too much paper towels. It's like, whoa, that's a pretty, why are there so many things that are alike? You know, you just need one, you know. That's what I thought. That was kind of mean. So I feel bad for, I'm sad for them. Nevertheless, one of the things they get crushed about is being obsessed with their phones. And I know some Luddites that think phones are killing community. Maybe they are. But it's causing a death through reappropriation more than an explicit killing, if you can follow me. They want something more. They want connection. They want intimacy. That's what I want. People are still trying to connect online. Even when you could be isolated in your own world, you're still finding a way to connect to somebody. You know, they're alone, but they're at least alone together. They're trying to do something in common. And you know, I like to name that, as opposed to just say, you know, you're going to die in a car accident because you're texting, which you might, so you shouldn't do that. But I don't want to just focus on the negative. I want to say, no, there might be something that you really want that's bigger than that. You know, people meet on dating websites. I talk to people who are looking to date. They can't meet anybody elsewhere. And they say, I don't even know how to do it. I can't just go to a bar and meet somebody. No, you can't? Is that hard to do? You know, I haven't dated in a long time. And I'm not really interested in doing it, but I'm kind of interested. I've told my friends, I want to get on the website just to see what it's like, you know? Because I don't know. I've never swiped anyone,
what you know?
I think she'd be fine with it. You know, Kristen was a real come up for me, you know what I mean? Like in Fishtown, like when you marry someone that's a lot better than you, they call it a come up. So she's not exactly threatened by my romantic prospects. But yeah, get on Tinder, you know, what's the difference? You know, so I was like, so I could just put on, I'm just looking for friends. I have swiped for my other comrades, so if you need a heavy hand, I have one. I can go through all the boys, too, just real fast. That's what I call them, boys. So they can't. That was one sentence, by the way. It took too long to get through. They connect on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, things like that. They share intimate photos, their lives together. They're trying to love their friends and share with them. I don't have a very negative opinion about this, and when I start to, I sound like an old dad, which I kind of am and feel like at this point for some reason, but I try not to be too contemptuous about it. So from a vantage point, people seem to want community, and they get pretty close to it. So I want to invite more people into it. It's authentic, it's real around here, and that's a good thing. And for a group of Christians, it should be. That's the whole idea. The law of Jesus is love. That's the heart of the gospel. And we summarize this basic idea with this conviction. We're called to be a living organism, building community together in love. And by the way, a million bullets are going to come down. Joshua told me to go through each one. So this is what I'm going to do for my brother. Because I'm a good, he's my main mentor. So generally, whatever Joshua tells me to do, I do it, you know. Amen. And then when I get in trouble, I say, Joshua made me do it. So that's how I protect myself. This whole proverb is basically based on this passage from John 13, 34 through 35. You can look that up on your phone. I don't care. Or check, act like you are, and then check your messages. You could do that too. It's Jesus' final instructions to his disciples. He's telling them that the heart of the gospel is expressed best when we love each other. Love one another like I've loved you. And love each other to the point of self-sacrifice. That self-giving love frees us, unlocks us from this myth of hoarding onto our love as if it's a finite resource. That's what we mean when we say self-giving love loosens the truth locked in our desires. It helps us be who we really are meant to be. The kind of love where you give of yourself to someone. And some of you are parents, and so you know what that is. That kind of self-sacrificing love. Jesus is trying to impart this to his friends. You know, I'm going to go do this pretty wild thing that I'm generally hesitant about doing because it seems so irrational. And I want you to serve each other in the same way. The law of Jesus is love. And if ourselves, these circles of 10, that meet in homes, which are really the heart of us, have Jesus as an agenda, which is what we say, then love is really the agenda. The cells keep us moving as an organism, just like actually in an organism. They multiply or they die off, or they're kind of a natural part of the life cycle. They aren't sterile programs that become fossilized into relics that are nice to look at, you know, 20 years from now, but don't have a lot of substance. You know, I like old church buildings. You know, I live right really close. I'm right at 18th and Diamond, so that's where right where the Church of the Advocate is. Beautiful building, historic space, and a lot of good work is done there and has been done there, you know. But the congregation can't really afford to maintain this crazy building. You know, it's beautiful. There's gargoyles and stuff, too. It's pretty amazing, you know. The cell's a little bit more biotic. And it can die, and that's okay. It doesn't have to become fossilized. They're living and breathing things with real people in them. The collective longing for community is something we should be conscious of. That's why our cells exist. They're the main place. That exchange of love and trust happens, and it develops us and disciples us. If we want to grow to follow Jesus, we'll learn to love your neighbor. You have to be connected. I mean, there is more to faith than that, but that's a good start for sure. And when we get into a deeper sense of community, we talk about agreements, the covenant. The covenant isn't like a contract where you're legally obligated to it, where the law will threaten you if you don't follow it. You know, this kind of legal system where there's some sort of violence that keeps you obeying your contract, right? You listen to your boss and the contract that she gave you, because if you don't, she'll fire you, right? That's why Maybe that's not why. Maybe you're not as cynical as others. Maybe you do it out of love, but that's the heart of the covenant. You know, it's not because you're threatened. You know, you don't study because you're afraid to get a bad grade. You study because you love what you're doing, right? Hooray for school, right? That's the idea. Same kind of thing here. This is a basic agreement that some people in the community want to make. And you guessed it, they make it to love each other. It's a commitment to love Jesus, love our leaders, love one another. And that's the long and the short of it. It puts us in a common family with a common father, as Jesus put it to his father, and kind of played into this Jewish idea of Father Abraham, too. The patriarchal images that we find in the Bible aren't always seen as negative in their time and place because they have some historic meaning. You know, right now we might use other language because we live in a postmodern era, and that's okay. But that's the language that Jesus used because for his people they were looking for the same kind of patriarch. If you only apply that to mean that you should be loved without doing any love in return, that's a little problem. In fact, elsewhere we say, those who love are likely to be the ones that we listen to most. Not because anyone's keeping track of how much love that you've dispensed, but because in general we listen to lovers, people who make disciples. And we celebrate this covenant at the love feast. The love of Jesus in communion and the covenant of our brothers and sisters. It's a really wonderful thing. It's like a family reunion. Kind of like this, except a little bigger. Sometimes it's in this room. It's a chance for the tribe to be together, symbol of our oneness. Other covenant members and others gather to worship and eat and play like we did the other weekend. And this is a whole reminder that we're the church and that the church isn't a building. It's people. It's a family. We're supporting each other and becoming who God is making us together. We love each other and we suffer with each other. This is a really important thing to have in an era of a lot of suffering. Maybe for some of us, surprising suffering. We're supporting each other and becoming like who God is making us together. And we have to keep being real. If we're a program or an institution or a thing, we might just die off. It's not just a meeting either. You know, one of the reasons I said we basically accomplished what we did just by gathering is because the church isn't just a meeting. You know, these 75 minutes or so of time is fairly arbitrary. You know, there's some intentionality behind it. But doing it at Sunday nights, for example, in this space with certain kind of songs and then me talking for a while and then you talking back, that's a nice way to do it, I guess, but it's fairly arbitrary. And that isn't really what makes us who we are. We extend beyond our meeting. And so does the cell. I mean, I don't want to underemphasize this time too much, but they're not the beginning and the end of what we do as a whole. And we're not just an institution, thank God. We're alive. It's not just a series of meetings. It's not just an association of congregations either. You know, we're not just loosely affiliated with each other. Like I'm one of your pastors too. I'm not just like your uncle somewhere else or your brother or something like that. We're connected to each other and we have more. Right? Roxborough, South Philly, South Jersey. So a lot of different people connected to each other. We want to stay intimate and close, so we keep the community small, but they're bonded together. Sometimes across borders and barriers that seem hard to cross. We're a body. This biotic image is all over the Bible. And Paul really makes it clear when he calls us a body. He's using this image. He uses a lot of images to describe the church. The one that really sticks with me is that he keeps saying we're the body. And I really love it because I said earlier, you know, when part of us suffers, we all suffer. And so for the people suffering in Charlottesville, for example, we all need to feel that pain. need is a kind of a heavy word. But I think if we're really connected to each other, the suffering that those people are going through is our suffering too. And it's so easy just to isolate and to try to numb it. You know? I suggest trying to soften and feel it, even as painful as it is. And that works best when the body is trusting each other and loving each other. It's a great way to start a trust relationship. So is telling the truth. And that establishes our basic trust relationship. The truth is furthered when we hold each other accountable. And when we talk about that word accountable, which has some baggage for some of us, what we're talking about is holding each other to what we've agreed to do. Not just principles that we've, you know, arbitrarily driven out of the Bible, you know. Like, I've proof-texted your life and found out how you're evil, so here's how you must submit, or something like that. No, it's just basically like, hey, I think we made an agreement about how you didn't want to do that anymore, you know. How you didn't want to just watch porn because you were bored. Remember you told me that? So, we can talk about that, you know. I'm not just imposing some judgment on you. We made the deal. It's personal. We're connected to each other. Following God is more than adhering to a suffocating moral guide, right? Praying that God guides us isn't just about following rules. And people want to do it because it's so much easier to do it that way. And when you think you're following rules, and you think you've achieved the righteousness, it's really hard to hold you accountable, you know? Because you think you've achieved it. And so, you know, working in community and working to grow together, acknowledging that we have places and growth areas, growth edges, is really good. It kind of softens our heart. When we suffer together, when we feel together, we can actually receive some accountability that works. Otherwise, we'll think that the gospel is just never talking to each other about any problem that we see. And I think oftentimes, because the church has suffocated us with a kind of a moralistic guide, it's so hard to receive any sort of feedback about who we are. And sometimes people are really mean about it. And I already told you, I've filled my quota of pain already. I don't need to collect more criticism and contempt from you. Softening ourselves, being in trust relationships, where we're talking about who we want to be, where we want to go, where God is leading us. I think that's good for community. You know, or how else are we going to defeat white supremacy? You know, if you can't hear the word racist without getting defensive, then well, whatever, let's just not talk about it. You know, I'll just freak out and then run away. You know, if I can't hear the word sexist without running away, what's my problem? You know, softening ourselves to actually be accountable to what we said we would do is really good. The church isn't just meetings or cells or teams, it extends beyond their meeting. And that's what, but these meetings teach us to be together. You know, the cells and the teams and even the Sunday meeting show us how to be one. Without being together and formed, it's hard to be conscious of an out and an in. The community actually has to have porous walls. This means something in biology that I forgot what it really means, but I think cells have like walls with holes in them because there's supposed to be certain things that go in and out. Right? There we go. That's good. I forgot. There we go. So the cell, the community needs to have enough structure so that people can leave and then get in, you know. If we're always afraid when someone pieces out, well, we're not very porous, are we? You know, the chance for someone to go and try something else or leave is another chance for someone to come in. Not just because they've created space, but because we know you can actually flow in and out. You could be too loose and there'd be nothing, because there's nothing to really get into. But as long as there's several entries and exit points, you're really porous. And you are something too. You know, if your building is, if the walls have too many holes in them or the holes are too big, it's not really a building anymore, right? It has to have some sort of structure. You have to be able to get it in and out. But we want to keep it porous. And so the being together tonight helps us even visualize that. The community can't actually be named if we don't have something binding us together. And even our immediate families who have been kind of brutalized by the nuclear family concept are made more whole and completed together in this extended family. Our parents model how to raise children and raise community together. And we all get a chance then to care for each other. And let me tell you, it is really good for kids to have a lot of different influencers. And a great way for children to keep the faith is by having a lot of people talk to them about it. And not just their pastor dad. Just a little, you know, help would be nice here. You know, because, you know, especially me. So I don't even know, like, I'm praying for my kids already because I'm their dad. And I'm kind of, you know, persistent with them. Like, I've already decided they're going to temple. So, like, and Kristen's like, no, you have to wait. Like, why would they not? I went to temple. It was really great. They should too. It's right here. We live right here. You know. Don't go somewhere far away. Why would you ever want to leave Philadelphia? You know, I still have this problem in my head, you know. Why would anyone want to leave Baltimore, right? It's the same kind of idea. I want to be connected. But when we parent together, the kids have a lot of influences, and that's really good for them and their faith and how they move and grow. And it's good for their attachment to Jesus, so it's not just assigned to their religious parents. We've seen how that goes sometimes. But that's where things can get tricky. The heart of who we are is Jesus, who is fundamentally loving. Love isn't just tolerance or acceptance. You know, the people in Charlottesville don't just need to be tolerated or accepted. They need to be loved. They need to actually be connected to each other. You know, if you just acknowledge they exist and hope the state rains down rights for them as if that's their savior, well, get out of town. That's not good enough. They have to have a love revolution. The whole thing has to change. It's a relationship. It's active. It's self-sacrificing. You know, if you hope that the state solves this for you and it does the self-sacrifice so that we can just keep doing our thing, that's trouble. You know, I'm not putting my trust in the chariots and horses, especially these chariots and horses, by the way. You know, Steve Bannon does not give me a lot of hope about this whole operation. So it's not like, you know, the rights ain't getting rained down anytime soon with this recalcitrant Congress either. So we actually have to do something. Sorry. I get tagged for being too political sometimes, but... You know, this is I am who I am. The familial love that we were just mentioning, the self-sacrifice, the mutuality, it's not just a matter of institutional tolerance or rights. It isn't law that binds us together. It's love that does. And let me just say that these Christian concepts are hard to apply in a contemporary political economy immediately. We have to be conscious of things like power and privilege, too. And with that, I'm just going to acknowledge that being right, told you it was a long list, being right isn't what saves us. Jesus reconciled himself unto us. He forgives us. He's bonded to us. He didn't just insist on being right, but through his love, he forgave our wrongness. And I wonder if we can move to do that, too.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.